Pad up. It's the Australian Cricket Podcast. And here are your hosts.
What's up and welcome back to the Australian Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Mensel, a.k.a. Menners. And joining me today on the panel, I have freelance cricket journalist Gav Joshi. How are you, Gav?
I'm very well. Good to be back on the show again.
Yeah, welcome back. And the other panellist is a journalist for News Corp and former sports writer, James Smith. How are you, Macca?
Menners, I'm fantastic. And I know that, you know, Gav, we should wish Menners a happy birthday here for the other week. I did try to wish him a happy birthday via text. I got no reply. And when I tried to call him later that day, I got a text back saying, too drunk to talk. So I think he was not only celebrating his birthday, Gav, and listeners, but he was also celebrating the end of the pay dispute.
That's right. It was a double whammy.
Imagine what it will do for the 200th show.
Well, that's it. So, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I had three big interviews in a row, which got up the show count pretty quickly. So this was show number 198, two to the 200. And I did put out a request a couple of shows ago for some emails about from listeners about the show. I got an excellent one from Hugo, talked about his favourite panellists and moments of the show. So if you've got time and you want to send in some email about the show, please do. It's auscricketpod, auscricketpod at gmail.com.
Manners, I want to ask you on and Gav, you're on 198. You're within touching distance of the double 100. Do you risk that second run or do you just wait for another single?
No risk.
Yeah, I think you want to secure that 200. Absolutely. Or, you know, if you get out for 199, do you look at the 190 shows you've already done or the one that you missed out on?
Yeah.
Now, we've got a lot to get through in this show. We're going to talk about the Bangladesh tour coming up. We've got the Women's World Cup wrap. And then we're going to finish this show with Can't Let It Go. But let's start with my favourite segment. It's Headlines by Andrew Mensel, brought to you by our Patreon subscribers. Thank you so much for the people that subscribe on Patreon, especially Ben McAvoy, who just upped his subscription to $5 a month. So he now gets a mug, which I'm sending out. But the first headline, as you touched on, Gav, is the pay dispute is over and the Bangladesh tour is on. I guess the overwhelming feeling is relief.
Yeah, absolutely. We all wanted this sorted out. We always wanted to go, you know, see how Australia will go in Bangladesh after, it wasn't a successful tour of India in terms of
They made headway on the subcontinent.
They did. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in Bangladesh. And it's nice to have us talking about what's going to happen on the field rather than what has happened off the field.
Now, I'm going to tell you right now, however Cricket Australia wants to spin this, they lost. The players basically got everything they wanted. CA caved in due to basically, I think it was external pressures, you know, the sponsors and all the time factor got to them with a massive season coming up. So CA have lost. I mean, does anyone disagree with that?
Well, I don't think anyone does, man. Can we say Dave Warner scored a TKO over James Sutherland?
Oh, definitely. And I think there's some big losers from this negotiation. And I'm going to give them the hairdryer right now. David Peaver, chairman of the Cricket Australia, you have made an absolute mess up of this negotiation. Publishing that article in the Australian newspaper was the biggest mistake of your tenure leading the cricket board at the moment. And his position has to come under question. He made a massive misjudgment in this whole process from the beginning. So first one, David Peaver, targets on him. Silence in the room. Next one, Pat Howard. Pat Howard was the messenger for a lot of these trying to get the players onside and lure them away from this revenue share model. So I'm wondering, how will players like Warner and Smith deal with Howard from now on? What do you guys think? He's someone that, unlike Peaver, has to have a working relationship with the big wigs in the team.
Yeah, you mentioned two names, Warner and Smith. Interesting that Smith on Fox Sports last week said that I had to be careful because I still have to have that relationship with likes of James Sutherland and Pat Howard. Well, I think Warner's probably gone, you know, slightly on a different track. He's gone out and said a lot of things in the media.
But Warner didn't say anything about them personally.
No, but I think they would know who he was sort of hinting about. And I think that's going to be interesting to see.
He's someone that could go. We don't need Pat Howard. We've talked about this on the show before. If someone has to go, he can be, well, I'm not going to say scapegoat, but he might have to go.
Well, man, I think a side issue of that is Pat Howard's tenures again. You know, James Patterson's injured again. Shortly, that falls under his scope, doesn't it, Gav? Why is James Patterson injured again? It looks like, again, You know, looking after our players, it's not working. Whatever they're doing is wrong, and Pat Howard's a part of it. So I think that, you know, there's probably a few issues at work there for his tenure with
the next one that has to go. Kevin Roberts, the lead negotiator for Cricket Australia, you messed this up. You put cricket in this country in peril. Bang, you've got to go. Next one, James Sutherland, CEO of Cricket Australia, comes in at the very last minute, tries to swoop in like a superhero and sort this out. How, after 17 years of experience at the head of this great game of ours, that he left it so late to get involved? So I don't know if he has to go, but I think there are serious question marks about whether he should have stepped forward and taken control earlier, or whether the board, including David Peaver, had locked Sutherland into a corner and kept him out.
Well, that, I think in all those four names you've mentioned, in the public eye, I think James Sutherland's probably enemy number one, because it's taken him so long to get involved. So you've got him down at number four in that list. I'm not sure if they're in particular order, but in according to the Australian public and the fans and so forth, I think James Sutherland might be that number one on the hit list.
You think he might be the scapegoat? That's a big call.
You think he'll go?
He won't go. I'm just putting that in perspective of, if out of those four names, I think his name is the one that's going to get real tarnished about what's happened, because he hadn't been able to step in a long time ago.
Do you think it's a classic sort of negotiating tactic, though? In war, or in, you know, disputes like this, you send out your generals or your lieutenants first, you know, like Peaver or Howard, and then as things get a bit sticky or it comes to a point, well, then the commander in chief steps in this case Sutherland, and looks as though he sorted it all out. I mean, he obviously got them tangled up in this mess. The same sort of situation is going on from the NRL CEO Todd Greenberg, in terms of he's not getting involved until it comes to a crux. Do you think? I think that was still a negotiating tactic. I don't think he looks good.
A massive stuff up. Doing it that way. We're not talking about companies. We're talking about this great game and national sport. Next one, the Australian newspaper. Two great writers, Gideon Hay and Peter Lawler, who write excellent stuff all the time. It's really some of the best cricket writing in this country. Yet alongside that, they run trash from David Peaver, propaganda piece. And then they'd write all these cricket articles that just pop up from these no-name writers that all of a sudden spouted a Cricket Australia line. So someone is feeding propaganda to the Australian newspaper. So you're a big loser from this, putting your name on those articles. And finally, anyone that listened to Waleed Ali's podcast on the dispute is a big loser, because your ears must have bloody bled by the end of that.
I don't listen to his podcast, Meadows. I don't know anyone who does.
Yeah, I don't listen to it, but if you're fuming about it, I know there's been something that's really upset you. It's got to be bad.
It has. It was really bad. So that's the big losers from the pay dispute. Let's not talk about it anymore. The fact is, it is sorted out, and all these people that have stuffed it up can work it out behind closed doors, because it is boring. All right, next one. Some good news. Let's talk about cricket. The Big Bash is back. The schedule for next season has been announced. There are 55 Big Bash games on TV. 12 of those are women's Big Bash games. The rest of the women's Big Bash will be streamed. The tournament kicks off on the 19th of December. They've expanded the men's Big Bash from 32 to 40 group games. I'm really happy with that expansion. When I spoke to Cutting and Bird, they were wary about expanding too much, but I think this is a good start.
Is that an extra week then, Menas, the 32 to 40 games? I think that's breaking point for mine. That's it, because I think, like the IPL, that stage happens is when, you know, it's a bit out from the finals and it's gone on a little bit too long. So I think they need to guard against that.
Well, I heard some press that, you know, when the semi-finals and final for the BBL are on, the kids will be back at school. Do you think that is something they should take into account?
Yeah, I would rather bring it a little bit forward. I know, just to have that, because Women's Big Bash actually starts around the 9th of December. So maybe just lead into those Big Bash games slightly earlier, because remember, what's going to happen again is we're going to get to the end of January when Australian team will be playing in a one-day competition, Big Bash will be at the tail end, and suddenly all the focus is again going to be at Big Bash. The crowds for the one-day series are going to decline because more people will want to go watch Big Bash, and rightly so. So I'm not sure I agree with it. I think it should have been sort of brought forward a little.
Yeah, I think there's a problem with that though, Gav. They tried that a couple of years ago, they got really poor ratings. As someone that has little kids, that run up to the end of the school year is frenetic. It's busy. So I think they're banking on people having more time sort of at the end of summer than at the beginning of the holidays.
Which clearly indicates that the priority for the organisers, the administrators, is the Big Bash rather than the one-day series. Then we might get to a point in another 2 or 3 years, if the Big Bash continues to grow as it is, we might not have a one-day series at the back end of the summer, because what is the point of it? Because most of the public, the TV audience, all they want to watch is Big Bash.
And back to Waleed Ali, I think the project, his show, is a real dampener on the Big Bash.
I agree.
It finishes at 7:30, and then so the first ball's not till about 7:40. So that means you're finishing just short of 11, which is too late
it's
for
ridiculous.
Little kids.
Yeah.
First ball should be 7:10 at the absolute latest.
And you can still get there after work.
And half an hour of the project, it'd still be too much.
Yeah,
I absolutely.
I know we've spoken about this off the record or off.
I'm going to get sued
the
after
microphone,
the show.
But and I love to gather like
legal what, department.
They're releasing this schedule now because I imagine they want to start selling tickets, but it's in the real business end of the both footy seasons. I just don't know how much publicity it gets. I know the Six has tried to sort of drum some up, that lasted about 5 minutes. I don't know if this is the ideal time to start.
I think
to do it.
Yeah, I think they could have waited till September or October when footy's quietening down. I guess they have to get the schedule out there, so they made something of it. Big bugbear is still no Christmas cricket.
I don't know if that's some of just the conservatism of Australia. And you know,
the players don't want it. Cutting said they don't want it.
Cutting said it. Chris Lynn, when I spoke to him during the IPL, said he doesn't want it. He said if the issue is not to play on that day, but he said because we're dispersed across different venues, if we were to play on Christmas Day, then Christmas Eve, we're going to have to be on a different city away from family. He said, that's the big
problem. Grow up, you professional athletes. I'm sick of this line. Oh, being away from Christmas.
It,
if you can offer them a massive cash incentive, why not do it?
And it is a sacred family day.
It's 20K for your family. That'll make Christmas
better.
But they
do it in North America, don't they? So why can't we do it?
So that's been the big changes. I guess one interesting thing, I saw someone point out that the Hobart Hurricanes are playing a game in Launceston. So do they become the Launceston Hurricanes for that night? Or?
Well, they'd have to change their nickname, wouldn't they? The Launceston
Lads?
Yeah.
Launceston Lads?
I couldn't think of a natural disaster there.
I'm not sure if it has been confirmed, but there's plans to have the match in Alice Springs as well, a WBBL match and a BBL match.
So that'll be a Victorian game, no doubt.
I think they might play cricket there. Might be the Adelaide Strikers who might be going over there. So I think that's a pretty good initiative as well, to take them to places where, you know, those kids out in the outback and even northern Queensland, they can't attend some of those matches. I'm not sure if Cairns might get a game or two, but I think that's a good initiative.
Must be hard, though, if you're one of these BBL franchises. You've given an extra home game. Why do you want to give it to someone else when you can make all that money on your own
game? I wouldn't do it. You're going to lose out on money, you know, and the facilities are probably not first class. I don't see the point in doing it. Those kids can watch it on TV, which is what most kids do these days, isn't it?
So next headline, and staying on T20 cricket, the Caribbean Premier League has kicked off in the last few days. The first game was in, I think, St. Kitts, but then they moved to, I could be wrong about that, but then they kicked off in Florida a day later. So I wonder if the cab test has passed. Apparently, when the cricket was in Houston, if you got in a cab and said, I'm going to the cricket, they were like, they didn't even know it was on. So I wonder if in Florida, anyone knows the cricket's on. I took a look at it. I think the Caribbean Premier League is fun. What do you think, Gav? Just a fun tournament.
Yeah, I think it's fun. I think the timing of it probably doesn't suit us, although it is better than the IPL. At least you can get up in the morning and switch a TV on.
And it's actually on cable TV here, unlike the IPL. No streaming or anything.
Yeah, I just worry about the quality. And it's almost seen as a too much of a sort of an entertainment way rather than not taking cricket far too seriously. Now, some people might disagree
with that.
Yeah, but
I like they have the send-offs and they have a bit more. They try and get the dancing
going.
It's got
the Caribbean flair to it. So.
Yeah.
Exactly. I like that. As you say, the standard is definitely a long way below the Big Bash and the IPL. I mean, the quality's not there. They don't get the overseas players, but it is fun, good to watch. Only two Aussies are competing this year, Shane Watson and Brad Hogg, two youngsters coming up. And two players have
been out for them.
Two players that have been ruled out with injury, Chris Lynn and Ben Cutting, as we spoke about in the interview with Ben. I guess the commentators, a new commentary critique will probably come in now that the CPL started. So the commentary lineup that I've seen, you got Danny Morrison, Mark Howard, Lisa Stelaker, Mel Jones, Mark Butcher, Ian Bishop and Tom Moody all there for the Caribbean Premier League. What a gig, being flown around the islands. But they should be paid extra because they've been made to wear some pretty awful-looking Hawaiian shirts. Just go and have a look.
Well, it's just a Channel 10 lineup almost, isn't it?
Yeah,
well,
obviously, they've tapped into that.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's I think it's just Danny Morrison's cupboard. I think
they borrowed his shirts.
Yeah, I reckon that's what Danny's like. So
I was watching the first game of the Caribbean Premier League and some bloke smashed one through covers and Morrison, you know, ranted on about it and he said, "Oh, it's great to be back." And I was like, "Yeah, it is great to have you back, Danny." A lot of energy for the game. And final headline. And I'm guessing this is a rumor started by Stuart McGill's manager, but there's a rumor going around that Stuart McGill could be the possible Bangladesh spin coach for the upcoming series against Australia. I don't think the Australian team will have any problem going against Stuart McGill.
I don't think anybody does. I mean, Stuart McGill, we know what kind of a character he is. I mean, we spoke about the pay dispute. I mean, Stuart McGill was the first person when Malcolm Speed actually took over as the CEO. He walked up to him at a function and basically his first words to him were, "You're the beep that's trying to beep our pay deal." And could you imagine Steve Smith going up to James Sutherland or anyone doing that? But, you know, that sums up what Stuart McGill
He probably had a few of his favourite Chardonnays under his belt, didn't he? But I do notice that he won his compensation case with Cricket Australia, though, didn't he? So he might be cashed up. Menace might not need it.
It was a settlement. All right, so that's headlines brought to you by our Patreon subscribers. We're going to take a short break. But before we do that, I've got some merch sent to me. Now, this is certainly something I should have promoted more. If you want to send me something, I will talk about it on the show. So Justin Avery has sent me some notebooks. They're called Back... If you can go onto the website, backpocket.co, and he has some excellent cricket notebooks here. Have a look at these guys. Now, Justin asked me to talk honestly about these books. They're amazing, really lovely. So if you need a notebook to take notes, definitely do it. I'm waiting for the app, though.
Yeah, I love the little cover. It's called All the Fielding Positions and so forth. Yep.
So, yeah, anyone wants to send me a cricket or non-cricket related product, let me know. Promotion on the way. We'll be back in a moment with the rest of the show. When I was doing some research into this, and I had a question about bowler safety and T20 bowlers wearing headgear, and it was interesting. I believe you're engaged to get married to Erin Holland, who's a former Miss World and a presenter and actor on Australian TV, and she said that she worries about you getting injured. So have you ever thought about wearing headgear as a T20 bowler?
I have, but I'm more worried that there's a rumour floating around that we're engaged, because that's certainly not the case.
Welcome back to the Australian Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Mensel. I'm here with Macca and Gav. And that was Ben Cutting dispelling a rumour that he's engaged to Erin Holland. So I thought I should put it on the record. He's not engaged to Erin Holland. I got that mistaken. There was a pretty poor article on Daily Mail, some snaps taken outside Ben's house that he hadn't actually seen yet. So, no, he's not getting married.
So, Gab Menes has been snooping around on the Daily Mail for all his latest gossip.
No, just put in Ben Cutting and that came up. So, yeah.
He's off the Australian subscription list.
But I might have caused some trouble because Erin was not happy he dispelled the rumour so quickly. And, you know, he's a former Miss World Australia, so he's played a pretty good knock there, Benny. All right, Ben Cutting did say some really interesting things. I wanted to touch on a couple of them. One was I asked him about David Warner's captaincy in the IPL, and he said Warner is a real bowler's captain and really lets you set your own field. So I think that's a really interesting thing. I think Steve Smith's probably a little bit more the other way. What do you think, Gav?
Yeah, absolutely agree. Speaking of Bhuvneshwar Kumar, who played under him at Sunrisers, he says the same thing. He basically trusts the bowlers and backs them to do whatever they want, and he'll adjust the field. So while some captains are not that decisive, they have a strategy and they want to try to enforce that onto the bowler. But Warner seems the other way around, which is you know, his own unique way, as you said. Definitely different to Steve Smith.
And the other thing, I put to Ben Cutting whether the crowd should be allowed to keep the ball in T20 cricket. He is in favour of it in Australia because he doesn't think the ball makes a difference. But he does say in India you can actually get the ball to reverse swing even in 20 overs. So,
yeah, absolutely. Well, given the quality of the Kookaburras, you might as well just keep throwing out the new ones.
So they were good chats. I chatted to Adam Voges, Ben Cutting and Jackson Bird 2 weeks ago. Really worth going back and having a listen to them.
You managed to nudge Bird into the team for Bangladesh as well, Manners. Well done.
Yeah, I did. That was all my
for the Qantas tour of Bangladesh, we should say. Are we sponsored by Qantas yet?
No, but if they want to send me a free air ticket, I'll talk about it. So
let's even to Bangladesh?
Will I get the same security as the team? Not
more,
sure.
More, well, let's talk more about more issues than security in Bangladesh, I think.
Well, let's talk about the Bangladesh Test Tour that starts in... Well, they leave on the 18th of August for Bangladesh. They play a tour match for 2 days, and then the first test is the 27th of August. The big news is Stark and Pattinson are out. In come Bird and Swepson. I think Bangladesh start favourites in this series. What do you guys think?
I think it might be a test series that could well be really dependent on the toss. I think Bangladesh are not going to give us what India's probably had, a little bit of those flat sort of pitches, especially the third test match in Ranchi. I think we're going to get ranked turners like we did, maybe not to the extent of the first test in Pune, but it's going to be, that's what they threw up against England, and clearly they came out on top. I mean, they did lose the first test match, but they won the second, and I think we're going to expect a bit of that. I'm not sure if they start favourites, especially given the way that Australia really stood up against India. All those
I think our preparation is a big worry.
It is.
We have a 2-day match there. I mean, we're not going to this camp like we did in India, but in Dubai where you were.
Well, they are going to Darwin.
Not the same.
Not the same thing. I think
you've been to both.
Yeah, it's more conditioning and all the effects of Dubai where they're batting on ranked turners. They had special pitches made out for them at the ICC Cricket Academy. The curators who knew what was going to do. I think there's a different initiative coming on slowly that we need a sort of a camp base somewhere in Asia where we can always go to before such series. We'll play Pakistan again next year. We need to find a place where we need to practice. I'm not sure where that is. I know there's something that might be happening within the next sort of 5 to 6 months where we're going to
can't give us any.
I don't know. I think it's along the
rumor mill is spinning. Two tests ago, Bangladesh beat Sri Lanka in their 100th test. So I think it's going to be a real test for Australia.
I'm worried, man. I think you've got it here. The spin attack of Agar and Lyon. Does Swepson get a run?
As opposed to the tour to India, O'Keefe's not there. So we lose that bowler that can hold up an end and keep the runs down. Khawaja will probably come back in at number 3 because Shaun Marsh is not even in the squad, or Steve Smith will bat 3 and Khawaja 4. So that changes the middle order. Probably a good thing. Will you both be happy with Khawaja instead of Shaun Marsh?
I am.
The whole country is.
You can't go against that. You want to test Usman Khawaja. He was so disappointed. You read the piece when I spoke to him during the IPL. He wanted to play in that India series desperately. He felt like he'd done enough hard work.
And he had, really, hadn't he?
Yeah, and now this is his chance. I mean, he's talk to talk now. It's walk to walk. He has to prove himself.
Yeah, first tour in a while. There's no Marsh brothers. Mitch or Sean will be back in Perth while the team is over there. And the other contentious spot, will be the number 6. You've got Glenn Maxwell or Hilton Cartwright vying for that number 6 spot. I think if they drop Maxwell after his tour to India, that would be ridiculous.
I agree. I mean, he got 100 in that third test match in Ranchi. I thought the better innings was actually in the second innings in Dharamshala, where he got 45. He was given out, where he padded up to Ravi Ashwin.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
nightmare.
That was a shocking decision. I still can't go over that, Menes. Can't let that one go.
Exactly. And I thought, if Maxwell batted that extra, even 45 minutes, and the target was suddenly 170, we never know. So I thought that was a better innings by Glenn Maxwell. And you can't drop him. He's guaranteed that number 6 spot.
I want Smith to tell us what he thinks of Maxwell's bowling, because he's supposed to be a part-time bowler, but Smith obviously doesn't ever want to bowl him, which means you almost think Hilton Cartwright comes in with a slight edge going into this test series. He might pip Maxwell because, Lehman and Smith will get together in their brains trust and go, well, if we've got Lyon and Agar and 2 quicks, we probably need a fifth medium pacer to bowl first change. So Cartwright comes in instead of Maxwell.
Do you think that Cartwright could maybe play that role that Andrew McDonald played once a while, that real dibbly
dobbly? Except he can't bowl like Andrew McDonald? He's a really good batsman. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. Cartwright is an up-and-coming, really strong middle-order batsman.
Like, come Gabba looking forward. Glenn Maxwell's, yes. If he doesn't perform too well or they decide that horses for courses policy, I would pick Hylton Cartwright at number six over Mitch Marsh for sure.
I mean, to give you an idea of the standard I think Cartwright's bowling is, remember when Matt Hayden used to bowl? Or Ricky Ponting. Damien Martin.
I think he's a better bowler than what you're saying about him. Having watched him in the A Tour up last year, I think he's a better bowler. Remember, your number six is a batting all-rounder, not someone who can bowl and get some runs and who has an average of 25.
So why have we persisted Mitchell Marsh for so long there then?
Well, he can actually bowl. That's the thing.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So that's what I mean. Come Gabba, if they decide to go horses for courses, I think it should be Hylton Cartwright, of course, but it depends.
They'll have four quick, so they won't need Hylton Cartwright. They need Maxwell with his offies. So I think that's going to be a really interesting one, the battle between Maxwell and Cartwright at six. And I guess I just wanted to talk a little bit about Ashton Agar because, look, although there is some trepidation in putting him in there, one thing I think viewers will be very surprised about, his bowling in the last year has developed a long way. He's not the bowler he was a year ago. So if the last time you saw him play for Australia, you think, oh God, he's developed. The last two Shield seasons, he's really come on.
Yeah, more than the Shield seasons, Menes, it's about bowling in the subcontinent. And the reason why Stephen O'Keefe is so successful going to India is for about 18 months prior to that India tour, he'd worked so hard with his technique where, you know, you have to almost lower your arm and get a bit of undercut on the ball, which is not natural to Australian spinners.
Are you talking about his drinking technique, Gab, or his bowling technique here?
or whatever comes out of his mouth, really. But Ashton Agar's improved a lot. Even in that camp in Dubai, Sridhar Sriram, who had so much to do with the likes of Stephen O'Keefe, Matt Renshaw, Peter Hanscombe, he said that I think Agar is just discovering how to bowl. He understands it. I don't think he's had enough time to be able to adjust like Stephen O'Keefe did, like 18 months prior to that India tour. So it's going to be interesting to see because
Steep learning curve.
But he,
I like that term.
He understands how to bowl. It's whether he can execute it.
I don't know. I just don't know if he can be effective over there. I think he's a bit loose.
He is. I think that's what I think Sriram was alluding to, that he's got to understand it's all about accuracy over there. It's the pitches will do the work for you. And for that concept to be instilled in your mind and to be able to execute is always the challenge. And it takes a long time. And the only person he said was able to do that was Stephen O'Keefe because he had that in his mind since 2015 when the Australian A Tour went over there and he was just basically practicing on accuracy and that's it.
How bad, Macca, is the fact that Stephen O'Keefe has not been selected?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, man, because I was just pondering myself and thinking it's a real sort of head scratcher.
I mean, you've been covering sport for a long, long
time,
and you've heard a lot of spin, yeah? Don't you think that this stuff about him being picked on performances is just spin?
Obviously, he stepped on some toes. Yeah.
Awful night he had at the New South Wales Awards. It's put a lot of people off, and he wasn't selected because of that. And I just think this is the most frustrating, and it makes me so angry with this decision because, as you say, Gav, we made headway in India, and yet we're going to leave one big piece out that helped make us headway.
Well, Menes, you're right. He's obviously persona non grata, isn't he? And people say maybe he's allegedly got a bit of a track record there, but I know I think the fans have a right to feel frustrated. Just call a spade and say that's why he's
not
there.
And there've been plenty of bad blokes that have played for Australia before. So I don't know why they're stopping now. I want to just shift the focus a little bit away from the Aussie team before we move on and just talk about a few of the Bangladesh players that I think some of the listeners won't be aware of, but there's some real excitement there about the whole squad. So I've got three names, Gav, that I'll throw at you to start.
Yep.
Tamim Iqbal,
yep,
the opener who had a stunning Champions Trophy. All-rounder Shakib Al-Hassan and their captain, Mushfiqur Rahim. I think those three really tough competitors.
Yeah, and I think they're world-class players. I think Shakib Al-Hassan is probably the best all-rounder going around in terms of his ability. Yes, there's those world rankings, which I don't really agree on. He bats at number five, and you open the bowling. Now, that to me is an all-rounder. Shakib Al Hasan could make that Bangladesh team just on his bowling and just on his batting. I don't think there's many cricketers around the world who are like that at the moment. Perhaps only Ben Stokes. So he's an amazing player. The thing I like about this Bangladesh team is if you look at their age, it's about 26 to about, say, 30, 31. So they've been part of international cricket now for 4 or 5 years. You know, they have that experience, but they're also youth in terms of they're around that 28. So they're at the peak of their cricketing powers. Tamim Iqbal is a superb batsman. I mean, he's got hundreds in England. I mean, not even David Warner's...
He'll attack the new ball.
Yeah, and not even David Warner's got that. So he's a terrific player. You spoke
about...
You think
Iqbal will be sledging Warner when he comes out? How many hundreds have you got in England, mate?
Mushfiqur, the wicketkeeper... He's a world-class...
And that's the captain, yeah?
Yeah, he's a little guy. He's probably
average
only...
Average is about 40 with the bat in Test cricket.
Yeah, his height's only about
better
four
than what we've got, huh?
His average, he's about 4'4", but my word, he's a brilliant batsman. I'm looking forward to what he actually tackled someone like Nathan Lyon, because all these sort of past 2 years, teams that have toured India, apart from Steve Smith, the guy who I think has handled Ravi Ashwin better than anyone apart from Smith is actually Mushfiqur Rahman. He's a superb player of spin bowling, and they have that depth there as well. You've got Soumya Sarkar, who's the opening batsman as well.
Mortaza, will he be playing, do you think?
Mortaza is only the one day player.
Yeah.
They've got Taskin Ahmed, a big lad who was, I think the ICC had a few issues with his action, but he's come back into the Test cricket. You were right. You know, they beat Sri Lanka at their home soil. We
they beat
all
England
know.
In a test.
Yeah, well, exactly. They pushed India all the way in India. The test match went into almost a stroke of T on the fifth day, and India scoring, I think, 680. Bangladesh replied with 420. That's good batting. You know, they know how to prove themselves. One important factor there is their coach, Chandika Hathorasinghe. Who's coaching?
Try saying that when you've had a few Chardonnays.
And if you look at him, he's actually, there's a lovely story when they played the World Cup in 2015 and they beat Afghanistan. The team was so sort of jubilant about beating Afghanistan, and he pulled them aside and he said, "Is this what you play cricket for? Is this what you're striving for? You're beating Afghanistan. You've been around in world cricket for 20 years and you feel this is your achievement." That talk, that honesty, has really propelled Bangladesh into what they've done over the last sort of year and a half and 2 years. And of course, he'll have some great insights about the Australian players. Don't forget, Chandika Hathorasinghe was the New South Wales assistant coach and coach.
Didn't work out well when Trevor Bayliss took on England's job. Some secrets, so it could be in the same boat.
Exactly. And at that 2010 period to 2012... That's when, you know, he was
Smith, Warner,
coaching
Lyon,
Hazelwood, Khawaja. So I think he's really turned Bangladesh cricket around.
Would you be surprised if Bangladesh won?
If they won the series, I would be surprised, because I think Australia's taken large steps. I think if Australia draw the series or even lose it, I think we've gone backwards again.
Now, Macca, Australia go ahead, they go to Bangladesh, and they lose the series. What sort of media storm do you think is going to rain down upon them? Because every time we've lost a game to a smaller nation, it is absolute a rain of terror on the Australian cricket team.
It'll be that again, yeah. If we, you know, we obviously always like to think of ourselves as winners, and if that does happen, if we do lose the series, it'll come down on them for sure. I guess, Gav or Men, is a thing I'd like to ponder is that Malcolm Knox had a good story about a week ago about how, you know, obviously Australia's a leading cricket nation and how we've just completely snubbed Bangladesh, you know, saying, you know, given the money that we put into the game and our standing, that we have we're duty bound to, you know, to promote cricket in these countries. I think we've played them once.
Yep, 2006.
They've been a test nation for 11 years. We've played them once, and that's in Bangladesh. I'm just wondering if that's a fair snub, isn't it? We've obviously just paid no interest. Will they be motivated by that?
I think so. And I think it would be great for world cricket if Bangladesh continues to develop as they have, especially over the last 2 years. Because if you look at the revenue of the television and so forth, if Bangladesh continue to evolve like they have, suddenly you not only have India around that region, but Bangladesh. And if you want tough competitions, teams are willing to go over there or host Bangladesh. And their crowd's wonderful. I mean, you just have to, you know, if Bangladesh played a test match in Sydney or Melbourne, I'm sure that they will draw a big crowd because of a lot of the Bangladesh expats who live in this country. So I think they're very critical.
Are they slated to come out here ever? I guess that's if the Test Championship.
But it's a fair point, isn't it? Why have we just brushed them?
And when we played them, it was in Darwin and Cairns or something.
That's right. And 2006, I mean, it was such a good Test match. I mean, that was our greatest Test.
Speaking of, McGill took a fair few wickets, I remember.
Yeah, but, you know, here we were. We had to chase 350. And it was only because we had class batsmen like Punter and Gilchrist. And I think we were even 5 for 150 at one stage when Bangladesh has made 400. It took a gutsy knock by Gilly to get us out of the hole and Ponting in the fourth innings. Wonder what happens if Bangladesh score 400 against this batting
done,
lineup.
Done. Goodbye. But to answer your question, it was a massive snub, but I don't think Australia should be beholden to bring these minnows on. I think it's an ICC responsibility to give context to these matches. Yeah. So, you know, I guarantee you and I 5 years ago would have been complaining about the meaningless cricket. So I think there is a balance there. But I can't wait. Should be really exciting. We'll wait till closer to tip.
Yeah, I hope it's a close match because if we've seen what happened in the last sort of 3 years, we've had such a good sort of Chappell and Hadley or a test series. And suddenly what's happened is Australia and New Zealand, they want to be playing again and again because they feel it's such a close contest. So hopefully Bangladesh is a close contest. And that way we realize that, hey, these guys are real deal.
Because we don't have the West Indies. We don't have New Zealand.
Yeah, I mean,
England are on the slide.
If you just have South Africa on the slide. You just have to look at the record. I mean, here's Bangladesh. They made it to the World Cup quarterfinals, Champions Trophy. They managed to, you know, reach the semifinals. So they're no easy beats. Of course, that's in the one-day format. But in Test cricket, I think that...
In Bangladesh, we are in trouble. All right, so that was our look ahead to the Bangladesh Test Tour. Yes,
I thought I'll throw in an interesting one. We said we haven't toured there. Australia did play a Test match in Dhaka. It was in 1959, but at that time they were known as East Pakistan.
Yes, so well, excellent.
Just an interesting little one.
No, it is an interesting one. Started many a war. Now, well, we're going to take a quick break, but before we take a break, I want to run through the Have a Go Your Mug promotion. It is still going on. If you leave a review for the podcast on iTunes or whatever app you listen to the show on, email me and you will go in the draw for a Have a Go Your Mug. As I said before, if you don't want to leave a review, you can subscribe to the show on Patreon and you will, for $5 a month or more, and you will get a mug straight away. So I've got two entrants for this week. I'm going to get Macca to draw the winner out. I've got James and Alistair are in the mug. I wonder which one you'll pick out.
The winner is James Barnett. Fantastic name. Congratulations. And this is a fantastic note for us. I've loved this podcast for a long time, but I'm getting concerned. And I think a few of us share these concerns, mainly about the professionalism of the cast. Who's this Andrew Mensel fella? He sounds more likely to sell me Dutch pancakes than know which side of the toss to fall on. Bring back Menas, more Macca, and there's nothing more Aussie than calling your mate by the place he's from, Kiwi Bob. Keep up the good old-fashioned Aussie podcast. That was a great point as to where the podcast should be headed. I don't know about this Andrew Mensel bloke either.
Great review. Thank you so much, James, for that. More Macca, so he's happy he got that one.
More Macca.
All right, listeners, we're going to take a short break and then we'll be back with the rest of the show.
Gaikwad on strike. Shrubsole in now. Buzz for Bolter! 6 wickets for Amy Shrubsole, England's hero. England win the World Cup in front of a packed house at Lord's. Who go nuts in the crowd? England in a huddle.
You're listening to the Australian Cricket Podcast. That was Alison Mitchell calling England's famous victory in the Women's World Cup final. And the podcast is moving to radio. I just wanted to let the listeners know that we've been offered a spot on 91.3 Sport FM in Perth. So we'll be doing a weekly chat about all things cricket. So if you're in Perth, I'll let you know when we're going to be on.
That's great news. Deserved news.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah.
That's, I'm going to share it around between the panelists.
Well done, Menas.
Thank you.
No Andrew Mensel on that one, though.
And now, I want to talk quickly about the Women's World Cup. So let's start off by congratulating England on winning and India for making...
What did you just say?
Did you say England on winning?
Did you say congratulations to England?
I'm being very...
You need a bit of a lie down, mate.
I do a little lie down. So India made the final. I was and still am shattered about Australia missing the final. It was such a defining moment in women's cricket. Australia should have been there at that Lords for the final, and they weren't. I mean, Gav, I'm going to throw it to you. I think Australia's Women's World Cup campaign was a massive failure for the Brains Trust that runs the team. What do you think as a starting point?
Look, there were probably out of ideas. Anyone else you spoke to, I think, might have been Lisa Stelaka. We have been going on about they needed to have that third pacer, needed to have more depth in their bowling, and play someone like Sarah Ailey, who was so phenomenal during the WBBL. I can't believe it. I totally agree with you. They probably lacked that creativity. I think they were too fixed in how they were going to go about their business and play eight batsmen, which I thought was not required. And I think that's cost them the World Cup.
And it's not a talent. It's a brains trust issue. And Mac is sitting out of the segment, by the way, listeners. You'll know his thoughts on the Women's World Cup. But I thought a few things that stand out for me. They were unable to move from that during the tournament. So, okay, it's good. You go in with a plan. You want three spinners and two quicks. Surely when Attapattu smashed 178 off 143 and England made 259 after being 6 for 174, you started to think that you were one bowler short. And then in the semi-final, Harmanpreet Kaur took full toll of that attack and smashed 171 not out off 115. So I guess who would have been? Matthew Mott and Meg Lanning would be the chief selectors?
Yeah, I believe so, but there are selectors as well with the women's cricket team as well. But look, I totally agree with you. I think it's the bowling department where we seem to be lacking.
But not just that, they had Rachel Haynes come in as a spare batsman and captain, which I don't think is a good precedent.
When there is someone experienced character, someone like Alex Blackwell there, the depth of the batting is just, I mean, here is Ash Gardner. She batted at number 3 during the WBBL. What's she doing at number 8? Elisa Healy is good enough to almost open the innings.
Well, why didn't they attack the new ball with Healy or Gardner?
Well, I mean, the thing I don't get is sometimes you're trying to fit everyone in. You have to choose your best openers. I mean, this could go down to even in the WBBL team, when I was told for Cricket Australia to choose that team. And it was either Beth Mooney or Elisa Healy. You had to pick one. You can't just fit both of them in, you know. And I thought those tough decisions weren't made by the selectors. If you had to have Beth Mooney in there, then maybe you had to leave out someone like Elisa Healy. Or the other way around, then Healy comes and opens the batting. Those power play against England, I just cannot believe. At least Villani, the finger gets pointed at her. But that was an ideal opportunity for someone like Elisa Healy to be promoted. That's what I mean. The creativity and the imagination was lacking.
How come during the tournament they didn't adapt, Gab? That's what I don't understand. That's what these big coaches are paid. And, you know, Meg Lanning and the Brains Trust in the women's cricket team, you have to adapt during the tournament. They didn't do that, and they were woefully smashed in the semi-final by Harmanpreet Kaur. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, I totally agree. But you...
I'm dirty, I'm mad, mad manners.
And here it is, but you still got to accept that this is one of the greatest innings that we'll probably see in women's cricket.
That's fine. Why does it have to happen against our team?
Well, it can happen against anyone. I mean,
rather England have been at the mercy of that. Well,
you know, those miracle winnings and happen in world cricket. It just happened to be against us. But the concern point was, as you said, two of the best innings of the World Cup have happened against Australia. Attapattu's and also Kaur's. That's where I think, as you rightly mentioned, Attapattu's innings should have rang alarm bells, and it didn't.
So we've got a long 4 years now to wait, Gav, until the next Women's World Cup. Congratulations, England. And as I said, I am mad about our campaign. The Brains Trust has let us down. All right. So a lot of mad manners in this show. I've been fired up. All right. Well, let's end this show with Can't Let It Go. This is where I ask each of the panellists for one thing that they can't let go from the cricketing week. I'll start with Macca. Now, Macca, what can't you let go of from the cricketing week? Have you noticed I've changed tone?
Yeah, you have. It's very serious now. Man, it's like, it's getting slightly political here, Gab, a bit diplomatic, very serious. Man, as I've just decided, you know, thinking about going on a trip to Bangladesh, so I'll head to DFAT's website just to see what they say.
Department of Foreign Affairs and Travel.
Yeah, the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. This is what they, this is the advice if you're considering touring Bangladesh, Gab and Menas.
I might be, sir.
Reconsider your need to travel to Bangladesh due to the high threat of a terrorist attack and the uncertain security situation. Now, I've suddenly just decided not to tour Bangladesh, Menas.
Were you selected to play in the Australian cricket team, though?
I'm just concerned, given, of course, what's happened in Sydney lately and, you know, for the last, what?
We all know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but I'm concerned.
You worried about the team? You worried? I mean, because the Bangladesh government will point to the fact that they gave the English team presidential-style security. You know, they blocked off literally the road to the ground. They literally, it was like the president was in town. So they're going to give that to the Australian cricket team.
Of course, but I'm just saying I don't know that I'd go if I was a player. But
my question for you is, do you think Smith, Warner, and all these stars that are earning lots and lots of money really want to go? N-O.
Yep. I agree. And I think if you look at some of, you know, if you look at...
Do you think they were telling Nico in the ACA, look, can you just slow down these negotiations? One more week, just...
That's a good point. I think...
Anyway, you're nervous. You're nervous for the team.
I'm nervous.
Can't let that go.
Yeah.
Sleepless nights about the Aussie
game. Gab, I'm just interested to see what you think. I mean, I just don't think they... Given the security situation, they can't guarantee...
Would you go over, Gab?
You're
given a job to report.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean... Cricket's my love.
Thought for your own safety?
No, not really. I mean, that's just how the world is. It can happen here. It can happen in, you know, South Africa, where you can walk out of your hotel and there's probably, chances are that someone's going to probably
rob you
or whatever. And it could happen in Bangladesh.
Upset a whole lot of people today.
Yeah, we have. So yep. Would you be worried if I went over there? Would you be worried about my...
Ooh. Gab, I think there's probably a difference between you and me that I look like a Westerner. You don't. I'm not trying to be funny,
of course.
But
it's true.
I stand out in the crowd. You wouldn't know. And whether it's me or Menas or Steve
I wouldn't
Smith,
stand out in the crowd. You wouldn't see me.
Or Prince Harry. Yeah, it's where
you might be
target.
The tallest man in Bangladesh.
Well,
you
maybe
know.
I will go. Mm. So, Gab, what can't you let go of?
I can't let go of how bad England are. They're winning a test series against South Africa. I know that. But South Africa, here we go. You
what
know,
is it, Jennings? How bad is that? The other guy, Milan?
What are they
they're
doing?
Bowlers? They're going to bring that bowling attack to Australia? Send the Ashes now. Save the trip.
Yeah, exactly. I can't let go. I mean, yes, South Africa did beat us, but South Africa have been miserable this England series. If England were realistically a really good team, they would have smashed this South African team in their home conditions 4-0. They lost a test match. They probably win the series 3-1, but I can't get over how bad. They just don't have batsmen. How bad can, you know, you've got so many people playing county cricket. How could you not have batsmen?
Yeah, the criticisms coming up now are that Trevor Bayliss has done wonders for the English white ball game, but not for the red ball game.
Absolutely. I have to agree with that.
Perfectly for our Ashes campaign. So I've got four can't let it go. So I'll start with the two that are related to the English team.
This has become your favourite segment.
Yes, and it's a bit of Mad Men. It's going to be a bit of both. But my first can't let it go is the James Anderson end. Old Trafford have named an end after James Anderson while he's still playing. So he took a wicket bowling from the James Anderson end. I'm sorry, that is not on. Wait till he is finished.
How many cricketers have actually had that? I mean, Tendulkar's...
How many cricketers like Anderson have got it? None should.
But yeah.
This is ridiculous. Did Steve Waugh get the ground named after him when he was playing?
I don't mind. I think it's a way to celebrate a player who's during his career. I think that's not a bad way to do it. But you're right. James Anderson will hardly be remembered as a great of a great game, will he?
Well, in England, unfortunately, they consider him one.
Well, I think he's a great, but I think...
Anyway, James Anderson, and I can't let that go. Wait until he's retired for that sort of shenanigans. The other thing I can't let go, and this is a bit of schadenfreude, but there's always a bit in there. Johnny Bairstow, universal good bloke. Everyone likes him. You know, real feel-good story in international cricket. He's got James Anderson out there with him. He's on 99 not out. England's 9 down. Everyone's thinking Anderson's going to get out. And then Bairstow, like, swings across a spin bowler, gets given out LBW, which if when they did the ball tracking, maybe a millimetre of the ball was in front of the stumps, but it was still umpire's call, so the decision wasn't reversed, and he trudged off 99 out. That was just good. I mean, that's good to see an English player suffer like that.
Shane Warne's commenting out there. Maybe he had a, you know, a little bit of chat out there where Warney said, when you're on 99, go for that big hoik over mid-wicket.
But where's the benefit of the doubt in that, Menes? Like,
a bloke's on 99.
I know.
Bad luck. Tell your story walking, pal. So that's the first two. Next, can't let it go, is 126 million viewers watched the Women's World Cup final in India. They're saying that that is the biggest ever viewing of any women's sporting event. So, I mean, one of the benefits to Australia going out was the fact that the women's game in India received a massive boost. And if I'm being serious, that is going to do wonders for the game.
Let's hope so. This is where, right now...
So 126 million's...
It is, but what happens afterwards?
It's 1/10 of their population, isn't it?
Yeah, and what's good crucial math. Is what happens after that. I mean, they need to latch on to this and provide, whether that's a women's IPL or whatever it is, they got to get most of it. If nothing transforms out of this, these numbers are probably, they don't mean much.
I think it will transform out of those numbers, I think.
Okay,
so.
Well, given what I hear from that part of the world, from the administrator's point of view, there's no real push for the women's game because the sponsors, the money is just not there.
Well, let's keep our fingers crossed that that changes. And last, can't let it go. And listeners to the show will know that I have been on record as being a massive Sydney Sixers fan, almost to my detriment, throwing out the clause of neutrality or unbiased reporting that I'm supposed to have. And what do I get for that?
You've been cheering the press box again, haven't
what
you?
What do I get from the Sixers but a massive snub? Not once, but twice. So last week, the Sydney Sixers sent out smash cakes to promote the launch of the season to every person in the cricket media in Sydney except the Australian Cricket Podcast. Now,
what a snub.
I could understand maybe going to the newspapers with that stuff, but then to send it to Jonesy and Amanda and Fitzy and Whipper, who would know nothing about cricket, is absolute diabolical. I cannot believe the snub. So that's the first thing. And second thing, then the Sixers produce a cricket podcast, and despite the fact that I live down the road and offered to help them, no reply. So they've snubbed me with the cake and the podcast. I've had Lisa Stalaker, Jackson Bird. I've had loads of Sixers players on, but maybe it is going to have to stop.
It's been a tough week.
I'm against the Thunder. Am I against the
Gav,
Sixers?
Look, he's even got a Sixers stapler here. Is
yeah.
Got the Sixers bat behind Gav. Massive snub from the Sixers. I don't like the Thunder. I don't like the Sixers. Who am I going to support, Macca? We need a third Sydney team.
The Launceston lads. They and could
those,
be yours.
Those magenta underwears that we see on his clothing line should be thrown out as
I'm
well.
Dying I'm dying at green just to spite them. So that's me. That's my can't let it go. A lot of them there. Well, listeners, I guess we should call it a day on the Australian Cricket Podcast this week. I'm hoping to have a special interview next week. I'm not sure who. And then we'll be back for the 200th Spectacular. And what I'm doing is special announcement. I'm going to have a massive panel. I'm going to get all the old favourites in, Gav, Macca, but also some of the ones from the beginning. Bob, even Joe, who's been suspended since his... Well, we're not talking about that. And then, so we're going to have a massive 200th episode. Please send us your emails, your favourite panellists, your favourite moments. If you've got things that you thought that you wanted us to bring up in the 200th show, we'd love to hear from you. Gav, thanks so much for coming along.
Thanks for having me on.
Macca, thanks for coming along.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, mate.
Listeners, thanks for downloading the show, and we'll be back soon.
What a marvellous stroke. He's played no better shot than that in the whole of the series.
But I do notice that he won. He didn't win... I do notice that he won his...